Hi, and welcome to Viva Politics Podcast, the podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture, hosted by Generation X, that's me, veteran political consultant, Dr. Laura Barbarena, and
the Viva Politics Office millennial, me, Lauren Coronado.
Well, guess what, Lauren?
What?
We have a very special guest today, and I'm excited because we now have a threefer. So you're going to be the millennial. I'm going to be the Generation X.
And I'm Generation Z. Is that what you were about to say?
I was like, where's this going? Is she going to call him out on being a boomer?
I think I'm being a boomer. Are you definitely a boomer?
I think I'm pre-boom. I'm more Paleolithic. That's what I'm closest to. Now, I will tell you my age if you promise to tell everyone how fabulous I look.
Okay, but I think we should start with your name.
Oh, wait, this is not a visual because usually I don't need to give my name.
We are so blessed to have in the Viva Politics studio, also known as Lauren's office, the incredible, talented, dear friend, Dan Guerrero. And in preparing for this interview, Lauren asked the age-old question,
who are you?
Well, obviously you're living under a rock, my dear.
I think I am.
Are you familiar with the term Google? I suggest you Google Dan Guerrero and then get back to me.
Okay.
Well, I actually, true story, I met Dan on an airplane.
Wait, is that true?
Yes. We met on an airplane.
Please tell me it wasn't Coach.
Actually, it was worse. It was Southwest.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was flying to, but I was sitting next to a gentleman who had a script in his hand. And, of course, I was being all fisgona, and so I kind of looked over. And you were going through some script, and I turned to you, because at the time I was quite young, quite Anglo-looking, and I said, are you Dan Guerrero? You looked at me, and you were like, who the heck are you? And I just literally started talking to you on an airplane.
Oh, my God, I love that. Wait a minute, I already knew Anthony,
though. No, you did not know Anthony.
I didn't know Anthony?
You didn't know Anthony.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and at that time, you were actually the executive producer for the Paul Rodriguez Show.
Oh, my God, we're talking early 90s. Yeah. 1990s for the millennial there.
I was born in 93.
I'm so happy for you. Yeah. Oh my God! Yeah, honestly, now it's coming back to me, but I had no memory of that.
That's fine. You don't have to. You meet a lot of people, Dan.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Do meet a lot of people. And then since that time, we've been able to just our friendship grow. You of course got to meet my husband, hang out with him in Hollywood because y'all are so wonderful in Hollywood. But there's just you. I can't even begin to succinctly say who you are because you are so much.
I know you mean that in a good way.
Yes,
but you know it's funny because people say who don't know me like this child here, and after I ask them to Google, I'm silent. I go, well, I it is hard because I do so many things. But that being said, I think it's always important to know that I am really all those things, really. Because, you see people's resumes, singer, dancer, narrator, MC, host, and they do none of them.
Yes.
But I really am all the things that I have done.
But even more than that, you do them very well. And so yes. I think that's the truth. You really
well, you do. Need to do it well. Yeah. Otherwise, forget
very
about it.
And of course, we've gotten, you have a one-man show called Gaytino, which is an incredible show that sort of tells the story of your life. But just shows, shows your talent, not just as a performer, but also as a writer. And it just, I love that show. If everyone who's listening has an opportunity to see it, because I know you've just recorded it, right?
Did you record it? Yeah, I actually have performed Gaytino. I performed it all over the country. I wrote it about 10 years ago. But it doesn't mean I've done 10,000 shows. Because of my producing and directing career, I don't have that much time to do Gaytino, so I only do a couple of performances a year. I've done it everywhere from the Kennedy Center in Washington and tons of universities, but twice here in San Antonio. One of the very first performances when it was the pre-premier LA run was at the Esperanza Center. I love the people down there. And then years later, I performed it at the Guadalupe. So I did film it just last fall. It was finished like May or so, and I started to submit to film festivals. So I've been doing the film festival route. And unfortunately, I was a little late this year for the San Antonio Film Festivals. But hopefully, hint, 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 I definitely will submit, because there's two. There's the San Antonio Film Festival and the Cine Festival. So hopefully I'll get... you know, into one of them, if not both. And then everyone can see Gaetino.
Well, what I love about Gaetino isn't just, I mean, obviously it tells the story of your life and the story of being the son of a very famous person, dare we say, Lalo Guerrero.
Right.
Lalo, of course, is just a prolific musician, entertainer.
The father of Chicano music.
The father
El
of Chicano
padre
music,
de la musica
right.
Chicana.
That's incredible. And I had the privilege and honor of getting to meet him before his passing. And, of course, Anthony and his group with Campanas de America performed one of his songs, and they've sort of propelled Campanas mm-hmm. into the genre of sort of pop. What is it, pop mariachi music or whatever the heck you would call it, but people love that song. It was Reinan la Minifalda.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was a huge hit for them.
Yeah, that's one of the fun ones. But yeah, I want to back up a little bit because, yes, it is my story, but I don't see it as my story. I really wrote Gaetino for a couple of reasons. I knew that through my story, the audience would see Chicano history, which, as we all know, is largely unknown. And LGBT history. You know, it's amazing how many young gay men will say, you couldn't hold hands when you moved to New York in the 60s. I'm like, no, schmuck, what are you thinking? You know, people today, unfortunately, a lot of, I don't mean all generation, whatever you are, X, Y, Z, you know, not all young people, but too many just don't know our history. And I wanted to celebrate both those histories, and I wanted to celebrate my dad. You know, a lot of the younger generation may not know who he is, and also my boyhood friend Carlos Almaraz, who was one of the leaders of the Chicano art movement in the early 70s. We met in grade school and were friends to the day he died from complications of HIV/AIDS in 1989. So I wanted to celebrate those two giants in my life, you know. So it's my story, but I never think of it as mine. You know, I'm just kind of, this is what I lived, this is what I saw, and yes, it's about me. And I won't lie, I am a fascinating creature.
Indeed.
Yeah, I don't lie.
Well,
don't
but
lie.
You know, one of the things that I, you know, obviously, because here at Viva Politics, we live, breathe, eat, drink politics,
mm-hmm. right.
And the show does have a lot of politics in
absolutely
it.
Absolutely. And it's funny because my dad, who you know, it's interesting because you do your thing, you just do what you do, and he wrote his music and he wrote his songs. I mean, he was recording, he was born and raised in Tucson, but he was recording in Spanish in Los Angeles in the 30s. He started his career in Tucson, but recording in the 30s, 40s, his heyday was the 50s, you know. So all this was pre-Grammys. Interestingly, I just posted something because they're starting a Latino gallery at the Grammy Museum, which is fantastic. But I'm wondering about all those people pre-Grammys. What about all those pioneers? And it wasn't just Dad. There's so many people were... Mexican Americans. I'm not talking about, you know, Pedro Infante. I'm talking about U.S. Mexican Americans who were celebrating Mexico and our culture pre-Grammys. And there should be a section there. But anyway, they started studying Dad in Chicano studies research, and he would read all this stuff because, of course, when academics talk about a career, that's a whole other ball game. And yes, the intersection of the this and the political, blah, blah, blah. And my dad would say, I was just writing songs, you know, I was just writing about what I saw. But in doing that, he really became the musical historian for the Chicano culture. But he used to say, I'm not political, but he totally was. You know, he was. No Chicanos on TV, that parody he wrote. And, you know, he was very political, always supporting, you know, when the UCLA Chicano students were striking, he'd go over there. So he was. But, you know, arts and politics are merged. They always have been. But I think more than ever. I mean, look what's happening on the border wall, that nightmare thing. Mm-hmm. And they're doing art on it. Artists are doing it. So the arts and political activism are absolutely.
I really love that you brought up the song, There's No Chicanos on TV. And Lauren, you've never heard this song, but it's funny because.
She doesn't know who he is.
But if you've heard the song today, it pretty much still holds water.
Yes, he wrote it in the 90s, and you could sing, and they do still sing it today, yeah. Because it's still sadly too true.
But I think that part of your career is that you really tried to change that. And I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about what were some of the challenges being a producer in Hollywood, trying to get Latinos on television that weren't, you know, these stereotype, you know, maids and ballets or whatever. Like, can you talk a little bit about some of the political with a small p challenges that Latinos have in Hollywood?
And still, I mean, is it better? Absolutely. But when you go from sub-zero to -2, you're still cold. You know what I'm saying? Well, I have to, before I get into that, because that came later in my career, I was born in Tucson, as both my mom and dad were born and raised there. I was born there, but we moved to LA so my dad could follow his career. And in junior high, are on a field trip to see the movie musical Oklahoma in Hollywood that my drama teacher, yes, I was taking drama in junior high. I knew you're shocked to hear that.
Weren't
we all? I fell in with musicals. And as a result, at age 20, I moved to New York City. And I lived there for 20 years. So I spent 20 years, all my 20s and all my 30s in New York, totally living a non-Latino life. I mean, all my friends knew I was Mexican-American, and I would do Mexican Christmases, and my mother would special delivery air mail frozen tamales, and so it wasn't that they didn't know, but I did not live a Latino life in any way. As I say in my show, Gaytino, the closest I ever got to anything Latino was sitting next to a Puerto Rican on the subway. That was it. And so I missed all the Chicano moratorium and the marches and all that and Caesar and Dolores founding the UFW, all that I missed and only knew about it through Carlos because he stayed in L.A. We moved together. He went back in 3 months. I stayed. So I came to the table late in celebrating my culture and becoming an activist and all that very late. So when I moved back to LA, which was the early 80s, yes, I know you weren't born, dear. In the early 80s, I thought to myself, hey, look at the numbers. There's a big Latino market, no question. And I knew there were very few Latinos with my background. Right. Really, and we're talking 1982. So I come out to California, there's no market. There's no market at all. There's like a handful of wonderful actors, Lupe Ontiveros, Rose Portillo, Robert Beltran, Richard Iniguez, you know, there's just a handful. And no Latino producers, no Latino directors. There was one Latino casting director in all of Hollywood. I became the second for a minute. And so there was none. So it was a blank slate. And so I started, I did a lot of things to be, so I was casting, because I was starting from square one and I was 40. Yeah. I'd had a very successful career in New York that I just left and came to LA to really to touch base with my culture, which really got kicked off when Zoot Suit hit Broadway. And Zoot Suit, by, of course, Luis Valdez, that's all my dad's music in Zoot Suit. Right. He did not write it for Zoot Suit. He wrote and recorded all those Pachuco songs back in the Pachuco era. And so I'm sitting in the Broadway house, seeing all these brown faces on stage. And I'm
way before Hamilton.
Like, oh, way before Hamilton. Way before. We're talking the late 70s, 1979, I think it was. And, and I'm at Sardi's opening night. I was always there with Ethel Merman, Bob Fosse, all those people, and all of a sudden there's all these brown faces at Sardi's. It was culture clash, literally. And that stayed with me. And so I decided, you know, it's time to go back and I can maybe make a difference. But it was really starting from zero. Not to say that there weren't people out there before me.
Right.
But my story. And so I just did what I could. I was casting and I would look at a script and I'd say, now let me ask you this film, there's this part of a doctor, you know, it's three great scenes, Dr. Jones, can't they be a Latino? This takes place in L.A. Sure. I mean, they just wouldn't think of it. It's not that they were necessarily let's not get loud. We just weren't even on their radar, yeah. Which is not that different today. And so I started to scoot Latinos into parts, and I started to write for entertainment newspapers, and I had a weekly column, and I would always write, you know, feature Latinos. And very first interview Jimmy Smits ever did when he arrived with L.A. Law, I interviewed him. You know, first time Salma Hayek, once I started producing, first U.S. appearance and, on television was Paul Rodriguez show. So I started to do my activism. I didn't realize I was doing activism at all.
Right.
I was just trying to fix things as best I could, you know. So that's the thing about activism and politics. They're all merged, you know. I do a talk, Activism and the Arts, A Life Journey. I've done it all over the country. And it's about that. It's there's all kinds of ways to be political and to be an activist. Visual arts, they do it with a brush. My dad did it with a guitar. Lalo Alcaraz does it with a cartoon strip. You know, the visual art is a dance, a play, you know, make a political statement. So it's a complete a mezcla, the two, you know. And when you go through politically, oh, let's say challenging times as we are at the moment, art really steps forward. Yeah. We talked earlier about they're doing fantastic paintings on the wall, the border wall. You know, an artist really rev up and they change history. They change history. Listen, the UFW, Luis Valdez, they you know, Carlos Almaraz, Barbara Carrasco, Judy Baca, all those renowned muralists and visual artists. They did posters for the teatro and banners for the UFW, and art was very, the No Grapes, No Uvas posters. Right. You know, it's very, very political, the arts.
Do you think today's political activism is different? I mean, now we have this thing called social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, how do you think that the activism of today is different from the activism that you sort of encountered in your life?
I think the tools may be different, but I think the passion and the message is the same. People are pissed off, you know. They are. And that's the good thing. Gloria Molina, a revered politician. I don't know if our young lady here knows Gloria Molina, but she was the first Latina on the you know, California State Assembly. She was the first Latina on the LA Board of Supervisors, the first one to be president. She is amazing. And Gloria, she's kind of retired now, but she's still full of piss and vinegar. I love it. And she once said to me, I said, how did you do it? I mean, a woman, you know, a Latina woman, and we're talking, this all was in the 80s, yeah. You know, and she says, you have to have a fire in your belly. And that's true. And that passion, I think, is mixed up with it's wrong what is happening, and we have to right it. And it's also, you get pissed. You know, I suspect that's why I was so late coming into activism, because it wasn't in my face in New York. I was just right. Doing my thing. You know, if I lived in a border town, I bet you I would be an activist by the time I was 10, because that wrong is in your face, right. You know. So geography has a lot to do, I think, with being an activist and what you personally encounter, what you personally see.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, I think in today, and I don't know how you feel about this, Lauren, but that we see, you know, back in the 70s and the 60s, where the LGBTQ community was just, that voice was so stifled.
Yes.
Where now, at least there's some spaces, right, where they can sing.
There's spaces, but it's not ideal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, but it is, as I say, while we're saying how difficult it is for those particular to many, many, but let's just now talk about the LGBT plus and the Latino communities. There has been, of course. Look, we actually have somebody running for president who's an openly gay man. I never would have dreamed I'd see that. Mm-hmm. You know,
and he talks about it on national television.
I know it. It's amazing. So have there been strides? Of course. But of course, it's no easier. Why are there so many teen suicides? And why, you know? And that you asked about social media. I when I travel with my talk, and we usually have a panel afterward. They do a Q&A and then a panel of local LGBTQ plus activists. And I'm like, I would think, and I put the word in quotes, it would be somewhat easier today, because when I realized at about, you know, age 12 that, oh, wait a minute, I think you're gay. I think probably said homosexual at that time. You know, there was nothing. You know, I'm looking in the mirror going, now what? I didn't know what that meant.
Right.
You know, and today there's out and proud celebrities on a magazine cover, and there's stories, and there's films, and, you know, and there's the internet, and, you know, it's okay. And yet, look at how many young people are committing suicide, you know, who can't. And I don't understand it. And someone was saying social media. Because whereas someone yells at you, hey, sissy, you're a faggot or whatever, in a classroom, you know, those 30 people hear it. And now it's there for everyone.
Millions.
Yeah. Millions. And so it's magnified in many ways. So, you know, it's a yin and a yang. It's a fantastic media, and it's dangerous.
One thing that you don't really touch upon too much, and I rarely hear you talk about, is religion and how that's affected your life. And how did the role of religion, did you grow up religious? Did your parents?
I'm grateful I did not grow up religious. Okay. I am extremely spiritual.
Okay.
I'm very spiritual, and I absolutely believe in some universal force. I don't know what it is, so don't ask me. And I don't know if it's a man or a woman, don't ask me. But I'm
it's
very
non-binary. It's
yes.
Non-binary.
Oh God, don't. I can't take any more labels. Oh God, it's so hard to keep up. I said growing up we were gay, straight, maybe bisexual if you were like adventuresome. And now, oh my God. But anyway, what was your question?
About religion. Oh, like, yeah. Did you grow up like
I'm
Catholic?
I'm happy about probably piss off some Catholics, but there you go. My parents were not religious, but religious enough that I was christened. I made my first communion. I was confirmed, you know, but that was it. And I'm grateful for that because unfortunately, so many young LGBTQ people that are having the most struggles often were brought up in very strictly religious homes mm-hmm. that are not fond of that. And that struggle is very, very real and very difficult. So I didn't have to deal with it at all, which I'm very grateful for. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of the Catholic Church, not just because of the LGBTQ, but overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I noticed that that's something that you really didn't touch upon too much on Gaytino.
Because it didn't touch me at all. Had nothing to do with my life.
Right. So, Lauren, do you have a question for Dan?
Are you too dazzled, dear?
she's like in awe, as we all are when we meet you.
Completely starstruck right now. So what are you working on right now?
Oh, Lord, how long is this podcast?
I know. Actually, I was like thinking, how are we going to make this into a podcast and not a pod series?
Make it sound like a bad thing.
Well, you know, I always feel good about my accomplishments, and then I get around you, and I'm like, oh, man, I haven't done crap.
Oh, God, no. You know what? It's just the opposite. I'll always read people's bios, and I go, oh, boy, what? I've done a few shows. I've written a little show. Who gives a shit? Oh, my, look at what this person has done. As a matter of fact, that brings up a whole other thing, if there's time. It was, you know, it's so funny because as your years go on, and they go on, if you're lucky and they go on, you find that your labels change. You know, every time I'd be introduced or there'd be a bio about me somewhere. It would always be, you know, producer, director at Angarero. And then it started to be, after my show, there was producer, director, performer at Angarero. And then I started to see, they started to add the word activist and educator. Because I do
really?
Lots. Because I am a UC Regents lecturer, dear.
Wow, fancy.
Exactement. So what
does that mean, activist and educator? What does that, well, I mean, I know what an educator means, but what do you think, what does that mean?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I to me, activists, I thought, activists, I'm not an activist. To me, activists are, you know, they marched, you know, and they're... And
they chained themselves to trees.
Yes, that's right. You know, and they're all handing flyers on the ground. And I'm, you know, putting on a show about the Latino experience, or I'm writing about a Latino. And to me, it just seemed, I felt a faux, you know, Gaytino, a fake. You know, I thought, I haven't done any of that stuff. And my parents weren't farm workers. I'm not even really a Chicano. I mean, I went through all that for a good while as things were changing. And then it finally dawned on me that there's all kinds of ways to be an activist. And we need all those voices. Yes, we need someone to go. I directed a mariachi opera about a year and a half ago with the Mariachi Vargas is on stage the whole time. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful opera written by Pepe Martinez, a senior who was with the Vargas for 1,000 years, and he passed, and his son Pepe Jr. was our musical director. And it's a beautiful story, really, about those that travel to El Norte, and the monarch butterfly becomes the metaphor for that. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. And so I knew that would change people, you know, those kinds of performances. People go, well, I never thought about that. And, you know, what people do, they just see the newspapers. Ah, they're storming the country. They're, you know, yeah. taking our jobs. Yeah, taking our jobs. Oh, and so that's important. That's as important as the person who stands on the corner with a flyer, or we need all those voices, you know. I always, because people sometimes ask, and I'm not clear, maybe you tell me, between an advocate and an activist. Those are slightly different things, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It seems like they might be...
I feel like you're advocating through activism most of the time. Is that kind of like the end goal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're like interwoven.
Yeah. And I think too, like, there's something about sort of being a Chicano activist versus a Latino activist versus a Hispanic activist. There's something very... There's something really charged
personal. It's
in the
personal.
Word of Chicano, right?
It's personal. I just finished doing a Spanish subtitle translate. I just had my film translated and has Spanish subtitles, and I want to do a study guide on both Chicano and Latino LGBT activists. That, like, in the general population in the LGBT world, you never hear about all the things Chicano LGBT have done for that reason.
Yeah, well, and I do think there is, you know, we're missing this whole piece of history, because when we think of Chicano activism and we think of the Chicano movimiento, we are missing the LGBTQ portion of that. It doesn't exist.
No,
it just doesn't
at
exist.
All. Do you know, if you have time, because you keep looking at your watch, she's not even subtle about it.
Let me look at the time. How much time do we have left?
Luis.
Well, wait, producer, how much time do you have left, producer?
That's... You got about 5.
Okay, good.
Okay, it's a great story.
Okay.
So I did a big exhibition of Carlos Almaraz's work at the museum in Los Angeles, and I did my show in conjunction with it, as I've done a couple of times, because, of course, so much of it is about Carlos. And Luis Valdez came to see my show, and then we went to the exhibition, and we kind of went, and I'm talking about the paintings and blah, blah, blah. And I even don't know how it comes up, but and there's a little group of people following us, about 30, 40 people with iPhones.
I believe they call that an entourage.
I'm sure they were following Luis. They were not following me. So we're going, and all of a sudden, I don't know how it comes up, but the LGBT plus community comes up, because I knew Caesar. Thank God. I mean, I knew him very well. The last few years of his life, I produced fundraisers for him. After he did Paul Rodriguez's show, that's when we met. And it wasn't until after he passed that I knew he was such a supporter of the LGBT community. And we never once spoke about it, because we always talked about the farm workers and the campesinos. And I so regret that. Dolores and I have talked about it. But anyway, Luis starts talking about, gay men and lesbian women were marching with us right at the beginning, right in the early days they were there for us. He says, as a matter of fact, he said, after the marches, we would all go and hang out at the People's Bar, which was owned and run by a lesbian, Mocha. I said, okay, hold on. And Mocha, he described wearing khaki pants, a Pendleton shirt, button to the top, kind of a haircut like mine, you know, buzz cut. And he said, and we'd all be there, gay men, lesbian women, campesinos, Caesar, just after these, and the visual, just, I said, you got to do a movie about that. He says, actually, it's a scene in one of my, I said, no, you have to do a movie just about Mocha, you know.
The Mocha movie.
But here's the thing. A voice from that little entourage. She was my tía.
Never mind.
I said, don't move. And of course, she went away. I mean, we kept moving and nothing. And then I never did see her.
Oh.
My point of this is, do you think I can find anything online about that bar or Mocha? Or they get nothing. I have scoured it. And recently I said to Dolores, you know, Luis was telling me about the blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, we all used to go there. I said, but what? There's nothing online about it at all. At all. Wow. Now, those are stories that need to be told.
Right.
So that's what I hope to do with my study guide.
Well, that's great because, you know, I just attended the 20-year anniversary at UT Austin. They have the Oral History Project. And this 2 weeks ago, and that's run by Dr. Shout out to Dr. Maggie.
I love Dr. Maggie. We love her.
Well, you know, and she started, you know, originally started as an oral history of the World War II. Then they got expanded to veterans. And now she's adding a whole component of activism. So this is something definitely that we should talk to her about.
Yeah.
But I do want to say that at this celebration, the University of Texas announced that it is now a center. It's no longer a project. So it's the Voces Center at UT Austin, which is a big deal, right?
Huge deal.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. And so, of course, it took them 20 years to get it, but, you know, at least it's done. And so I think, you know, there's a place where we can capture these stories and have them available for young millennials like Lauren, who doesn't even know what the Chicano movement was.
But you know what? It's not
in the books.
But even the LGBT, I'm learning it myself, you know, because I've been gay forever, but I haven't studied it, you know. And so, you know, when I hear them, and then this, and then that, and then the intersection, and I'm going, and now we're they, now we're them, and now I'm like, holy crap. I mean, I can barely grasp it, so I can imagine a straight person how complex it is, you know. So, yeah, I'm going to call Dr. Maggie. I'm going to drag her in to work with the student and the study guide.
There it is, Maggie.
Yeah.
There
okay,
it is,
it's out
Maggie.
There. I know you have to run, you have more important things to do. So thank you for your time today. Do you want to wrap up with something?
Yeah, I think I just want to thank you for coming. It is, I know we're friends and we always joke, but it really is. I am so privileged to have you in my life. And I'm going to start crying now, but I do. I love you. You are such an icon. You are such an inspiration. Those days when it's hard for me to get up and do the work that I do, I look at people like you and it just gives me that extra oomph that I need. See, I told you I was going to cry.
But we look at you and feel the same.
Oh, you're so cute.
Your husband, not so much. But you... We love Anthony Medrano. Thank you, darling.
No, and you can come back anytime, dear.
And thank you for reminding me about how we met. I love
that
story.
Nuestro podcast es su podcast, as we say here at Viva Politics.
Yes. So, Dan, where can people find you online?
Oh, they can go to danguerrero.com or gaytino.com. And I know I'm on Instagram, but I think it's Gaytino Show. And I'm on Facebook. And I stand on the corner of in downtown San Antonio, alternate Thursdays.
Ah, perfect, perfect.
All right, so again, we want to thank our special guest, Dan Guerrero, for being here. And we feel very blessed that he was able to share his stories and his ideas.
So that wraps up this week of the Viva Politics podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Viva Politics Pod. And you can find us on Twitter at Viva Politics. If you have a topic or idea, be sure to send us a DM. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.